Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Stafford Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today, Monday, October 10th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
I'm just going to mention to the listeners, while we were waiting to come on air, we were talking about the debate.
There was a debate last night.
Oh. And Greg Hunter of USAWatchdog.com will be joining us tomorrow, Tuesday, October 11th. And I'm sure he'll want to talk much about the debate. So I told Al we'll just talk briefly about the debate today. But as I mentioned, I was actually proud of Donald Trump last night. He did well. And I'll tell you what, there was times when Hillary's eyes, you could see the fire burning in them. And I thought she lost control several times. I mean, you could tell she wasn't in control, not lost control, but wasn't in control. Unlike the first debate, it just seemed like, you know, she was all smile and happy, kind of had a, her attitude was, you know, she was just a little, just had a little sway to her. She didn't have any of that last night. And I thought. And as much as they beat Donald Trump up over the weekend over his comments with Billy Bush in the interview, which was, you know, basically, talk that you would hear in a locker room talk as Donald Trump described it. I mean, that was played, you know, from the time that was released on Friday. I mean, every 2 minutes.
Is nobody has died because of anything that Trump has said. Or done. All right. Hillary Clinton can't say the same thing. Some guys in Benghazi are dead, and they didn't die easy. They died hard. They died screaming. All right. While Hillary sat back and did nothing
and lied about it.
We can bitch about whether or not Donald Trump said something that was of color or whatever.
Well, I'm just talking.
Nobody's died from his comments.
My point was, Al, considering how they hammered him. Through the whole weekend, he did an excellent job last night, and he was in. I think he was in the lead the whole debate, and he was strong last night.
Good.
So I'm sure we'll talk more about that tomorrow. But just to remind you, listeners, that Greg Hunter will be joining us tomorrow, probably a little more of a follow up of the debate. But I think Trump definitely won, and it really is amazing. How those commentators, the one lady from, I think, ABC, actually was in a debate with them. I mean, it's like, that's not your job. And she was actually debating Trump.
Yeah.
It's like, no. It's so surprising. When you see this, you expect it, but it's, you know, you'd think that they would be able to have a little control.
You expect people to be biased, but you expect
them to be
if they're professional,
exactly.
That's exactly right. They will not appear biased.
Yes.
Right? But when they just let it all hang out and said, I'm going for it, you know?
Yeah.
They could have just sent Hillary home. Well, we got this, Hillary. You go on home. Commentators will deal with Trump.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's, you know, you pick these things out, and so it was an interesting debate. I actually enjoyed it, and I thought Trump did very well. Gold today, it's been doing the same thing for the past couple of days. Starts out really strong in the morning. You know, by the end of the day, weekends, we basically have it was challenged all day long. We had a high of 1263. And we're settling in on the New York spot after market price at about $12.59. Silver was up a few pennies, 0.07 at $17.70. Platinum was down 9 at $962. Palladium was down 2 at $671. The U.S. index today was up 46 at $96.93. Crude oil was up huge today, and we'll talk about why that was up big today, 1.33 at 51.14. And the paper markets today, we had the Dow, of course, that was up 88 points, 18,329. The NASDAQ was up 36 at 53.28. The S&P up 10 at 21.63. The euro did have an impact today after being, you know, holding strong at 112. It's now 111, down 59. Crude oil today up huge. Anyway. I don't know if anybody got my humor there.
I got it. I know what you were attempting to do. And it was a funny attempt. I'll give you that. Right? That was Melody. For those of you who didn't quite pick up on this, that was Melody's impersonation of Donald Trump.
Thank you.
Now, no locker room talk, Melody.
No, not on
you know TV. What happens, so don't know more of that.
Hey, this is real. To me, I think this is interesting. Saudi Arabia and Russia. They are the world's two largest crude oil producers, and they're getting ready to cooperate to limit output. And, of course, this is why we've seen oil, and we've been seeing oil, and particularly today, up 1.33, which will help send prices to a one-year, which did send prices to a one-year high in London. So Russia is willing to join OPEC's efforts to stabilize the market. So it's either going to require them to either a freeze or a cut. This is what Putin said today at the World Energy Congress in Istanbul. Many producers outside the group have expressed a willingness to cooperate on output caps, said Saudi Arabia's energy and industry minister Khalid Al-Fali, who added that he was optimistic there'll be a deal that could lift prices as high as $60 by year end. Coordinated output curves by Russia and the OPEC, who together pump about half the world's oil, could boost fuel prices for consumers and revive the fortunes of a battered energy industry. Now, while Putin's comments are the firmest indication yet that such an agreement is possible, Russia is still pumping at record levels and has stopped short of a commitment to pull back. OPEC members also have a lot of hurdles to overcome before implementing their first cut in 8 years. So maybe it's a little too early to start celebrating. And of course, again, you have markets reacting to just promises. In an interview, Norway's petroleum and energy minister said they have made great progress, and this could end up in an agreement that might materialize around Christmas in the first quarter of next year. Ministers from some of the largest oil-producing nations are gathering in Turkey this week to discuss ways to end a two-year supply glut. I got the numbers on what they're producing and so forth, and, you know, it's Minutes from the some group members, including Saudi Arabia and Algeria, will meet with non-OPEC nations, including Russia and Azerbaijan in Istanbul on Wednesday, to discuss a wider cooperation. So Russia is ready to join in some measures to limit output, and calls on other oil exporters to do the same. This comes from Putin. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see how these agreements play out. And if history tells us anything, it could be that these major oil players also have the habit to not respect the agreed agreement. But I think this is interesting. This is why we're seeing oil prices higher. And of course, we're going to have a reflection of this at the oil, at the gasoline pumps. But it's interesting that OPEC and this relationship with Russia is continuing to grow.
Well, the question is, who's going to go along with the program? That's point one. And it's not going to be easily done because there's an enormous supply. All right. If everybody agrees, okay, we're not going to produce any more oil right now until the supply channel is cleared out. Well, it might be, who knows? I mean, if they stop completely, it might take 6 months to consume the oil that's sitting there in the supply lines right now. And then they can start up. The point I'm trying to make is they can't, most of these people are in desperate financial situations. They can't stop producing. I mean, and they can't even cut back easily. At least a lot of these countries can't cut back without essentially cutting their own throats. And there's this big supply. I'm thinking that Russia's agreement with Saudi Arabia has more to do with politics than it has to do with oil. We'll talk about oil, but this is perhaps trying to establish a closer a relationship between Russia and Saudi Arabia. And if they do, it will be at the expense of, it'll be at the expense of the United States. But we'll watch. This whole thing is, there's too much oil, too little demand. And the people who pump oil are desperate for currency. Trying to persuade them, look, you need to stop pumping oil. All right? That's not going to be an easy sale. And again, like you said, the chances that they will obey the agreement. Oh, yeah, yeah. All of you people cut production. We, in our country, will agree to cut production, but A, we may have to break the rules a little bit from time to time to kind of hold our economy together. These oil producers aren't any more honest and trustworthy than politicians and bankers, and we're talking more money, more money, more money, and that means there really aren't any rules.
Well, I'm not quite sure if you freeze production, and you're right, they're such in dire straits now. If prices rise, what does the price of oil have to rise to in order to compensate them enough to freeze for a short period of time? But what was funny, back on September 28th in Algiers, OPEC, now this is what I consider funny, agreed in principle. Now OPEC agreed in principle to limit output, you know, so, and then that was enough to raise crude prices by about 15%. So, we should, in principle, we should cut our oil price.
This is a great idea, and we are all in favor of the principle.
We're all in favor of the principle.
But not if it takes any money out of my pocket. I think the principle is fine for the rest of you people, but I need the money.
Yeah, that's funny. OPEC agreed in principle with the... So anyway, but this is why we have higher oil prices today. I think the relationship between Russia and OPEC is interesting, considering OPEC is no longer committed to the United States, viewing the problems that the United States is having with Russia right now. And it's interesting to see tides. The tide is changing, folks, and that's what I find interesting. There's no more, you know, one thing I've noticed in this country and how hard I work in my business, there's no loyalty anymore. You know, people are willing to drop to save a penny, and you work hard to gain that loyalty, and it's just a sign of the times, and this is what you're seeing. You know, there's no loyalty to the Saudis, to the U.S. anymore with the agreements that they made. The Saudis have been able to, you know, hey, they're they're able to protect themselves now. They build up their arms and their weapons and so forth with the amount of money that they have made with the higher oil prices and so forth over the years with the arrangements with the, so we've helped, the United States has helped all these countries to fare so much better than here at home. And now we're the ones that are hurting, and everything, we gave everything away from China to the Saudis to, I mean, we did. We just kind of gave everything away, didn't we, Al?
Pretty much. And they traded it off for things like the New World Order.
Yep.
Instead of doing what was best for the United States, we have done what is best for global government. And the result has been damaging for the United States of America. We are paying a price for it. And we, the people, are going to pay that price. And rightfully so. It's, the price has been imposed upon us by a bunch of treasonous whores in the cat house on the Potomac. But the truth is, we elected them. We refused to see what was going on. We were more interested in dancing with the stars than we were in what's happening in Washington. And so, now we're going to pay a price for that. And when you talk about it, it's, when we talk about a lack of loyalty, I don't know how much loyalty there's ever really been. We talk about it all the time.
I'd like to think there was.
I know we all like to think there was, and maybe there was. I'm not saying there wasn't any there.
There had been some.
But what I am saying is, if you're looking for loyalty, you're going
to
look for it in a culture that's based on a nation. It's a national concept. Loyalty to, you know, your home, to your state, to your city, to your government, whatever. There's a loyalty that flows in a nation. There is no loyalty in an economy. An economy is, what have you done for me lately? And by lately, I mean in the last 5 or 10 seconds. And if you're not putting any money in my pocket right now, don't count on my loyalty. There is a completely different mindset when they have changed us from a nation to an economy. In a nation, there's the concept of right and wrong. In an economy, the whole thing runs on just two things, profit and loss. If you're making money, you're good. If you're not making money, you're bad. Insofar as we embrace this theory that it's the economy, stupid, insofar as people get into that, don't look for any loyalty. Don't look for any of the right and wrong. It's all about profit and loss, and anything goes. If it makes money, it's okay. So that's where we are right now, and I think if we want to get away, if we really want to get back to some semblance of loyalty, we're going to have to give up the economy. We're going to have to put the economy, you can never get away from economics. That's not my point, of course, but we're going to have to get to a point where we think less about what's right for the economy, what's profit and loss, and more about right and wrong. You got morality is over here. It's part of the nation. You got profit and loss, and that's all you get in the economy. Want to embrace the economy? Fine. You're going to have a moral breakdown. If you don't want the moral breakdown, then you're going to have to reject Bill Clinton's observation that it's the economy, stupid. Maybe it's not.
And
maybe it really is the nation. And maybe we need to start worrying about our nation more so than our economy. And that would mean, if people followed that advice, it would mean that we would probably suffer on an economic level. Might be that the profits wouldn't be as high. Might be that the losses would be bigger if we went back to the nation and that system of values rather than the system of values that's associated with the economy. But if this nation could regain its moral footing, if that was possible, and it wouldn't be easy, and that's another thing that we're all in favor of in theory. We're like the OPEC. We're all in favor of this.
In principle,
we're all in favor of it. Easy to say, hard to do, but if we could do that, once that moral foundation was rebuilt, I believe you could begin to see some measure of real prosperity develop in this country again. We've got about 30 seconds left, and just want to say one little thing about the debate. Quartz Magazine published an article, and the headline was, "Who won the debate? Who cares? We all lost." That was their perspective. I'm looking at this debate as interesting because I think it's proving that if you're a gangster, a thug, a hustler, a con artist, you'd better think twice about running for the presidency. Nobody gets out of that. I mean, this, the next guy to run for the presidency, you are going to be hammered and trashed and destroyed unless you are just as clean as a saint. Let's take a break. A couple of commercials. Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Many, many people have experienced the benefits of drinking all-natural life-change tea. The unique blend of 8 herbs helps detoxify your body so you can live a healthier life. Numerous testimonies have been given about the benefits of drinking life-change tea. So, are you drinking life-change tea? Interested? Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Many are so impressed with our product, they order a year's supply. And why not? When they do, they receive 2 months free. That's a $70 savings. The body is meant to heal itself. Sometimes a body just needs a little help. Get the tea at GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Or call us at 928-308-0408. That's 928-308-0408. This is not an ordinary green tea, and it's not available in stores. This tea helps with digestive problems, acid reflux, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and as talk show host Jerry Doyle says, it'll make you as regular as a baby bird. Enjoy your life. Get life change tea at GetTheTea.com.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom. And, Melody, what's next?
I was enjoying the new music. Recently, today, Al, you heard about this. I just noticed this, but we have missiles that are fired at a U.S. warship from Houthi-controlled territory in Yemen. And the rebel forces in Yemen are those thought to be blamed after a missile was fired on a U.S. Navy warship in the Red Sea. The USS Mason is a guided missile destroyer was shot at with rockets but was undamaged. The vessel was on a routine patrol in international waters, according to officials. It detected 2 inbound missiles over a 60-minute period while in the Red Sea. Off the coast of Yemen. Both missiles impacted the water before reaching the ship. There were no injuries to our soldiers, to our sailors, and no damage to the ship. Pentagon did not specify how close the missiles came to the USS Mason. But a U.S. defense official told Reuters the first missile forced the U.S. Mason to take defensive measures. So I would assume that that is fairly close.
Yeah, I would assume that the trajectory was on target. All right, that would be my guess. And the implication is that the missile essentially ran out of gas. I mean, they can detect these things. I have no idea. I at least 10, 15 miles away and probably more than that. So, you know, you see it coming. All right, get out of the way. And do whatever they have to do. They may have, I don't mean that they just tried to dodge the missile. I'm sure they have other countermeasures, but the missile apparently ran out of gas before it reached the target, which on one level is kind of encouraging. It indicates that the morons who fired the missile don't really understand how far the missile can go. Right? I mean, this is gross incompetence on the part of whoever fired the missiles. Somebody has given missiles to a bunch of idiots. On the other hand, they're going to learn from this experience. And someone is giving missiles to rebels in Yemen, providing them with missiles that could... I don't doubt that if one of these missiles hits that ship is certainly going to be disabled and maybe sunk. This is no game.
No.
This has got to throw a big scare into everybody in the Navy right now that's caught in that, in close quarters there in the Middle East. They really are like sitting ducks. And if somebody's putting really good missiles, they're making available on shore. I mean, I wouldn't want to be on that ship. You can almost bet that the day is coming when we're going to get a different report over the news media. The missiles will have hit. They won't be short. They won't have, been miscalculated. We live in that age, you know, it's like robots and computers and all the rest of it. One of those missiles, it can take out one of those ships. And it's almost a certainty. If somebody's handing them out, it's going to happen. So.
And also the former Soviet leader, Mikhail Gorbachev, he came out today and said that the world has reached a dangerous point. And this is because of the tensions between Russia and the U.S. over the Syria conflict. Relationships between Moscow and Washington have been at the lowest since the Cold War over the Ukraine conflict have soured further after the U.S. pulled the plug on the Syria talks and accused Russia of hacking attacks. The Kremlin has suspended a series of nuclear pacts, including a symbolic cooperation deal to cut stocks of weapons-grade plutonium. Gorbachev said that he thinks the world has reached a dangerous point, and he says he doesn't want to give any concrete prescriptions, but all he wants to say is that this needs to stop. He says stopping the talks, he says, was a big mistake. And, it's like the U.S. is just pushing for something to happen.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I don't want a nuclear war over Syria. if you have a nuclear war, then let's make it a little bit bigger than Syria, you know? Is Syria worth it? And,
Syria is just a pretense.
It's just a pretense.
If they're going to have one, it'll be for reasons that go. Syria is just an excuse.
Yes.
You know, you insulted my mother, and therefore I'm going to burn your house down. No, that's not why you're burning the house down. You have other axes to grind, but the insult to the mother, whether real or imagined, that's going to be the pretext for setting fire to the house. Same thing with this. And it does... I get the impression, I don't know who's to blame, I don't know who is innocent, if anyone, but I get the impression that the United States government has been pushing Russia.
Yep.
And Russia, it's like anything else. You can push a little dog a long ways, but sooner or later, that little dog is going to try to bite you. And our government seems determined to make something happen with Russia. This goes back all with, this includes the debacle with the Ukraine. That was all brought on because the United States wanted a pro-U.S. government in Ukraine, which is right next to Russia, so they could establish some anti-ballistic missiles that they could have just on the inside of the border of the Ukraine, and if Russia tried to launch any ICBMs, they'd shoot them down while they were still moving 20 foot per minute or something like that. They were just barely being launched. They were easy targets, and if we had control of the Ukraine, we'd be able to set those missiles up. It didn't work out. And the U.S. has been, they're still angry about this, apparently. And it's evidence they really do want some kind of a war with Russia. Serious war. I mean, if I were Russian and I were sitting back there and I was looking at this, it is hard to believe what I'm able to see and understand. It's hard to believe that the United States doesn't want to precipitate a war with Russia. But it's easy to believe that really they want to. I don't mean that they want to necessarily 100%, but 60%, 70%. They're sitting back and they're saying, we need to get a war going with Russia. What for? Does anyone know why? I mean, Russia's not hurting anyone to my knowledge. I'm not arguing that they are pristine, pure as the driven snow. I'm not arguing they're the good guys. Show me a country where you can say, there's a good government. If you've got a good government, we've never heard of them.
Well, you know, the difference between now also, we always seem to have had leaders that sort of just seemed a little level-headed, you know? I mean, not like a loose cannon, and I'm sorry, Obama, and those that he has around him, I mean, it's hard to think it's these other leaders that are egging this on. I mean, they're just, and I'm not sticking up for Putin or anything else.
I understand that.
I'm just looking at, you know, personalities, and we've had 8 years of disasters. Yes, the stock market is back to 18,000. Oh, glory be. You have the NASDAQ back to 5,000. Big deal. Look what has happened to this country in order to get those numbers to where they are. This country has been destroyed from within, and it just doesn't happen these past 8 years. It's been happening for a long time, ever since they took us off the gold standard. We're not going to talk about that. The point is, it always seems that we had leaders that just had some sort of a control, you know. And with Obama, it's just like he just, you know, he's...
It's not Obama all by himself. He's part and parcel of the neoconservatives, near as I can see, and they're bound and determined they want
bound
a war.
Bound and determined they want war.
And when we
to
talk
cover
about
up our,
this,
yeah.
Well, maybe to and cover why? Up our economy. I don't know what their motives are on this thing one way or the other. I have no idea. But when we talk about this, and we seem, you could sit back and say, well, they're in favor of Putin. No, we're not. We're in favor of the American people. That's who's going to get nuked. I don't care what happens to Russia per se. I'm sitting back and saying our government is willing to put the American people in great harm. Right? They're putting us in great jeopardy, and I want to know why. I mean, if this thing goes south, you can start a little war going one way or another, and if they can confine it to the Middle East, fine. I don't know. I'm not saying it's a good thing. It may be an inevitable thing. I'm not saying that. But this, you play this game, and you run the risk of all-out thermonuclear war. These people are crazy. You understand? They are crazy to take that risk. What is to be gained? Does anybody know? I don't know what it is. I mean, what is there to be gained that people would be willing to risk nuclear war? Anybody know?
Well,
anybody,
you know,
got an idea? So we're talking,
yeah,
we're talking from the stress. I'm not worried about Putin, but I am worried about the American people, and therefore, and the people of this country are the ones who stand to be nuked if the idiots in Washington don't learn to control themselves. So, that's my perspective.
Well, you know what? They get to blow it all up. They kill people, and then they get to build it up and make billions more.
I don't know what they're up to, really. I mean, this is part and parcel.
They have to destroy the United States. Their goal is they have to continue to destroy the United States.
I understand that. It's part of the reason for allowing all the illegal aliens into this country, not just from Mexico, but from other countries as well.
And you know what?
They
maybe
will balkanize this country. It will be destroyed from within. And it's not happening by accident. There's, oh, we're going to sing Kumbaya, and we're all going to be buddies and pals. Tell it to black Americans. How's that worked out? Different race, different culture, and we're all just going to get together and sing Kumbaya? We haven't been able to do that with blacks in a couple hundred years. We see these kinds of conflicts going on in between Pakistan and India. We see it in Serbia, between the Muslims and the Protestants and whatever. I mean, some of these cultural problems go on for centuries. And they say, oh, no, we'll bring in another culture and it'll all sing Kumbaya. They're crazy. The people that are advocating this are out to destroy. I don't believe they're that stupid. I don't really believe they're that crazy. They're doing this intentionally to destroy this country. If we had any brains, if we had any sense, put a wall between the United States and Mexico, build another one between the United States and Canada, put another one down the East Coast, the West Coast, and the Gulf Coast. I'm exaggerating, but I'm trying to make a point. This place needs, we need to control who's coming into this country, and you can't do it on the basis of, well, we'll just bring anybody who wants to come, you just come on down and we'll give you welfare and support you and medical care. Bunk! If you can't support yourself, stay out! We don't need you! Somebody needs to do that in Washington, D.C., and I don't see anybody, at least so far, who's willing to address, you know, look at things from that perspective and so on. Destruction, destruction, destruction. And as a result of this treachery that is permitted, that is perpetrated by our own government, you wind up finding yourself in a position where you wind up speaking on behalf of somebody like Vladimir Putin and or Russia. The fun, you know, politics makes for strange bedfellows. That includes this country as well as the rest of the world. The government of the United States does not represent the best interests of the American people. I don't think anybody believes that they do. They're taking this country apart, and therefore we have to look for our allies elsewhere. And sometimes, you know, drags you off into situations that you might not, you wouldn't have thought were possible. You wind up speaking on behalf of entities that you would have thought, I mean, 10 years, 20 years ago, 50 years ago, he said, oh, that'll never happen. That'll never happen. We would never stand up and speak on behalf of Vladimir Putin and Russia as opposed to the government of the United States. And yet here we are. But the government of the United States brings this on. This isn't something where we just woke up one morning and we said, hey, I know, let's do something treacherous relative to the government of the United States. No, the government has been betraying us steadily for decades. And it's become obvious in the last little while. And they're the ones that push us to look elsewhere for support or for understanding or whatever. You can't trust the government. I certainly don't. And it's, and here's one other point. People say, oh, you've got to trust your government. No, you don't. The whole genius of the Constitution of the United States is that it's an anti-government document. They gave us separation of powers. They divided the government powers into three separate jurisdictions or magistracies. Alright? If you're in the executive branch, you don't make the law. If you're in the legislative branch, you don't execute the law. If you're in the judicial branch, you don't perform either the executive or the legislative functions. That's the way it's supposed to be. It's not there to make government more efficient and more powerful. It's there because the founders understood that the principal enemy of the people of any country has always been their own government. Always. Principal enemy of Germany was German government. Especially true during the Nazi era. Principal enemy of any country you care to name, when the stuff hits the fan, it's because their government has been inept, incompetent, or treacherous. And they are more than a little bit inclined to do treachery. We have First Amendment, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, freedom of association. Why do we have that? Not to protect us from the, it's not to protect us from the Russians or the Red Chinese, it's to protect us from our own government. We get to stand up and say, look what those treasonous whores are doing in the cat house. We get to do that. And it has nothing to do with, it's to protecting us from Great Britain and whoever. It's not about them. It's about our government and its inclination, like all governments, to engage in treachery. Second Amendment. What is the Second Amendment there for? To protect us against, to go duck hunting? To go deer hunting? To protect us against an invasion by Great Britain or Red China or Mexico or Canada? No, it's there to protect us from our own government, and you can verify it from your, for yourself by reading the preamble to the Bill of Rights. It's a document that's a cover letter from the Bill of Rights, and it said the purpose of this, we proposed, they proposed 13 or 17 amendments, 10 were adopted, we call them the Bill of Rights. The Congress, when they sent the proposed amendments out to the states, it said the purpose is to prevent misconstruction or abuse of the powers of the Constitution. That was the purpose of what became our Bill of Rights. Nobody has powers under the Constitution other than the federal government. Second Amendment is there to protect you and me against the federal government. And that's not me making some radical talk. That's me reading the preamble to the Bill of Rights. You can find it. You can Google it. Preamble to Bill of Rights. You'll find it. And you'll find it at a .gov website. This isn't some crazy guy's idea. This was the letter that went out with the original, the amendments that became our Bill of Rights. Protect us from our government. Constitution, anti-government document. It is completely American to be skeptical and even resistant to government power. I'm Alfred Addis. We'll be back in a moment on Financial Survival. Melody and I will join you shortly. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
We did get an email, and we're just going to touch on this briefly because we spent the last, 20 minutes on this topic. But then we'll go into some financial news. From a listener, it's about Russia. He says it's just plain wrong for a third-rate power with a GDP smaller than Italy or California's to strut around like a great power. This will only lead to grief. We need to put Putin and Russia back in a box where it belongs so it can't hurt anyone, especially its neighbors. And don't worry about nukes. It's very destructive. That means they'll never be used.
Tell that to North Korea.
He wants to, you can add Belarus and Georgia into NATO, so be it. We need to establish a no-fly zone over Syria. One carrier task force will do it, and if any aircraft defy it, down they go.
Well, that's all very interesting, but what do we get for it? There's a no-fly zone over Syria. Okay, so what? What do we get for it? How does that help the American people? What has Syria done to us? Syria may be refusing to install an oil pipeline, that the people that our government serves, they may be refusing to do that. But what has Syria done to you and me? I don't see that they've done anything. Right? I don't think the oil pipeline going from Saudi Arabia or whatever going to Europe is such a big deal. It's not my problem. I can understand there's a lot of money to be made and there's a lot of bribes to be paid to congressmen and senators and presidents. But what has it done for the American people? How does it help us? How does it threaten us?
Hey, it was us arming the rebels that ended up those weapons going to ISIS. I mean, so basically, in the beginning, everybody forgets about the beginning and how everything has started.
Yeah, no, once it gets rolling, everybody just climbs on the bandwagon. Remember,
and I'm not a fan of Putin, I'm not a fan of Russia. However, Russia has made some friends, and China is one. So you're just not fighting with Russia anymore, putting them back into a box. You're fighting with China. You're fighting now with Iran. You're fighting now with the Saudis. So it's just not Russia anymore. And that is how we've lost our place. And it's a bigger, to me, today, it's a bigger thing than just Russia.
Oh, I agree.
It would be nice to put them back. It'd be nice to put them all back in their little box. But
it'd be nice to put Washington back in its little box called the Constitution, limited powers. That'd be nice, too.
Well, we're not there, and it is today, and we have to view things with, it's a lot bigger than just Russia. And, you know, and there's more nukes out there, and I don't think they want to actually, you know, push the button to have one of those things go off. On the other hand,
there's
stuff
crazy
happens.
People.
It's crazy.
And we have flash crashes on the stock markets. All of a sudden, a fraction of a second, and the price and the market index falls by who knows, 10%, 20%. How did it happen? Nobody seems to know. We have hackers in the world. We're not merely interested and capable of cracking into the Democratic National Committee's email supply to find out what Hillary's been up to lately. They are, in theory, in principle, capable of hacking into whatever it is that the whatever command and control system they have that control nuclear weapons. You know, somewhere along the line, there is not a guarantee that we're not going to see nukes fly. Nobody wants it. But it's one of those things, it's like playing Russian roulette. There is a very big bullet. It might only be one bullet, but it's a big one. And they're in the cylinder of the revolver, and we're spinning. So, oh, don't worry about it. You got five empty chambers, and you only got one with a bullet. The odds are good. Let's take a shot. Let's take a chance. For what? To enrich the oil companies? To enrich the top tenth of a percent of the United States of America? What are we doing this for? And why are we, the people, assuming this risk? I don't understand it. I can see it's happening, but I don't, you know, there's people say, you got to get behind the boys. Once the war starts, you got to get behind the boys. You know, no, you can't take any criticism and the rest, that sort of thing. You got to support the government, support it. Listen, if people really wanted to get behind the boys, they'd get in front of them. Those boys and girls, and that's what many of them are, who are in the military, are depending on the government of the United States to not put them in harm's way for some stupid reason or even some just greed. They want to do what's right for this country, not just what's for right for whatever special interest the government represents. And we sit back and we say, oh, they're fighting for our freedoms. No, they're not. What freedom of mind is threatened by Syria? What freedom of mine or yours was threatened by Vietnam or Iraq? They didn't do anything to us. The only people that have taken my freedoms are located in Washington, D.C. or Austin, Texas. And I don't like saying that, but it's the truth of the matter. Anytime the military wants to stand up and protect our rights, first thing they do is get control of Washington, D.C. They're the ones that are taking the rights. It's not Syria, not Russia. I'm not arguing that we got to be friends with everybody in the world or anything like that, but I am suggesting that maybe we could mind our own business, and we could at least, if we're going to get into war, let's do it for the benefit of the people of the United States of America rather than the top tenth of a percent. So, what else, Melody?
Let's talk a little bit about Deutsche Bank. Their shares fell again today about 3% after their chief executive has failed to secure a speedy deal with the U.S. Department of Justice over the weekend, over the mis-selling of mortgage-backed securities. Cryan was attending the IMF and World Bank's autumn meetings in Washington. No reports on what came out of that this weekend. There was too much locker room talk, complaining, and hopes that he might be able to negotiate that $14 billion fine with the DOJ didn't work out so well. So their shares dropped about 3%. One had hoped that a quick agreement was possible. We saw their shares bounce up a little bit last week. Maybe they thought that they had another day or two to live, but that doesn't seem to be working out for them this week. So not sure what is going to lead. And you know what's interesting? Everybody's saying that the German lender, the German government will not bail out this bank, Deutsche Bank. Well, what's interesting is, I think it was just of this earlier this year, they came out and passed the Banking Recovery and Resolution Directive, also known as the BRRD. That came into force earlier this year, and that requires, and how convenient the timing of it all, requires an 8% bail-in of banks' creditors, including very large foreign banks and hedge funds, be applied before taxpayers get put on the hook. The directive has a well-laid-out structure resolving a troubled or failing European bank, irrespective of whether it is a small lender in Italy or a national champion in Germany. So, interesting, again, passing laws to make sure that the bail-ins, certain folks are protected, but yet the little taxpayer and other banks, foreign banks, hedge funds, which would mean, I think, ties the derivatives section, you know, to the foreign banks and hedge funds, get put on the hook. So,
well, what's interesting about that, from my perspective, is when they're passing new laws to ensure that certain thresholds be met before the taxpayers be put on the hook.
Yeah, I know.
I'll guarantee you what the law really is. We're going to put the taxpayers
on the hook first.
The taxpayers get ready to be hooked because the government is going to, they say, oh, we're going to protect you and make sure that only under the, they already know what's going on. The reality is they are laying the foundation for putting the taxpayers on the hook. This is another one. Why are the taxpayers paying this bill? You know, there's a point sometimes that, hey, why don't we just let Deutsche Bank go right down the pipe and to hell with it? Excuse my French. That's a French term. It means helk.
I was just going to say, what happened there?
You know, there's a point in time where we cannot. And the people who are least able to support these rich folks are the ones that are being called on to do it. And say, oh, we'll get the poor people, the taxpayers, we'll get them. We'll take away some of their benefits, we'll increase their taxes, we'll do something, because we've got to protect the rich. That's our job, to protect the top tenth of a percent. And it's not our job. It's not what this country was all about. You know, again, this is a little bit of this business about you adopt the system of values that's associated with an economy, and you abandon the system of values that were associated with the nation. The nation was about right and wrong, and in theory, it did what it could for the little guy as well as the big guy. I know in practice it didn't work out that way, but still that was what it's intended to do. Right now, if we're just running an economy, the guy who makes the most money is the guy who gets to make the rules. Right? And we have special deals for them, and for the rest of the peons, they get to pay the bills. It's interesting to me also that Deutsche Bank is concerned about a $14 billion penalty that's supposedly being imposed by the United States government. What is that? I got an article here from Zero Hedge, and the headline is, Deutsche Bank tells investors not to worry about its 46 trillion euros in derivatives. Look, if you got an extra 46 trillion in derivatives, why not cut a few off and give them to the government? Say, here, you wanted 14 billion? Tell you what, I like you guys, I'm going to give you 20 billion in derivatives. How's that? I mean, it's just bizarre. They're rattled about $14 billion fine while they've got $46 trillion in derivatives. Last week, the article says J.P. Morgan admitted that the biggest rate risk facing Deutsche Bank was the derivatives. All right? It's not so much the funding issues, but rather derivatives exposure that are more likely to trouble markets going forward if Deutsche Bank concerns continue. Now, what do you think? Now, that's interesting to me. It's like saying if gravity continues to pull people toward the center of the earth, then we're going to have a certain problem. Of course it's going to continue. Of course Deutsche Bank's concerns will continue. This is especially true if these concerns propagate into a confidence crisis, inducing more rapid unwinding of the derivatives contract. They're saying, oh my gosh, what will happen if the people lose confidence in the derivatives markets? Of course they're going to lose confidence in it. Some people guesstimate there are over $250 billion worth of derivatives in the world. Some people say it's down in the neighborhood of 300, 500 trillion. I don't know what it is, but it can't be paid. I know that. And how do you maintain confidence in something that can't happen? Deutsche Bank has one of the world's largest notional derivatives books, its portfolio of financial contracts based on the values of other assets. It peaked in 2013 at over 75 trillion, 20 times the German gross domestic product, but it shrunk to around 46 trillion by the end of last year. That's about 12% of the total notional value of derivatives outstanding worldwide. They say it's only 384 trillion only. Derivatives worldwide. This is according to the Bank of International Settlements, who I believe all bankers and all politicians. Speaking to the German publication Bild, Deutsche Bank's chief risk officer, Stuart Lewis, said that Deutsche Bank is continuing to cut back the size of its derivatives book, which is not as risky as investors may believe. Okay? A lot of people think this is what the chief Deutsche Bank's chief risk officer says, all 46 trillion euros in derivatives, not as risky. A lot of people think that's risky, but no, it's not as risky. It's like juggling nitroglycerin or playing Russian roulette. These are activities that are really a whole lot safer than most people would imagine, at least if we can believe the Deutsche Bank's chief risk officer. He goes on, he says, the risks in our derivative books are massively overestimated. He said 46 trillion euros in derivatives exposure at Deutsche Bank appeared large, but reflected only the notional value of the contracts. And what they're saying here is that 46 trillion euros, see, it's not something to worry about because it's only about 12 times the size of Germany's gross domestic product. And more, Deutsche Bank's net exposure derivatives was far lower at about 41 billion now. Well, wait a second here. They say it's 41 billion euros. I didn't catch that the first time I read this. They're saying 46 trillion. They're saying, all right, I'm learning something here. They're saying in the euros, it's the notional value of the euros is 46 trillion, and they're saying the real value is only 41 billion. I'd misread that, and I thought they said 41 trillion. Well, I'll agree that if it's true that the net exposure is only 41 trillion, I'll agree that's not such a tremendous problem. Nevertheless, we're out of time. I'll have to get that story a little straighter here, and maybe we'll get back to it tomorrow. Thank you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow with Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com. Please tune in at that time. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer.
Bye-bye.
That's too bad.